Herod proved his brilliance before Rome by assuring Augustus of his loyalty, and in turn received an expanded Judea, one no longer under any obligation to Egypt. Meanwhile, Cleopatra and Antony died by suicide, with burial sites unknown to this day, their legend hailed by the words of Shakespeare's play named for them. No grave upon the earth shall clip in it a pair so famous. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 64. Antony and Cleopatra, Herod and Mariam. I am Mayor Soloveitchik. What do two Middle Eastern queens have in common? When it comes to the two we consider today, we realize they share a great deal. Last week, we compared Queen Cleopatra with King Herod, but now we must ponder the similarities between the Queen of Egypt and King Herod's wife, Mariam, whom he had married in order to link himself with the legacy of the Maccabees. I only recently realized how profound the parallels are. Cleopatra was the last heir of the Ptolemies, descendants of the Greek general who had created Alexandria and made the city one of the wonders of the world. The dynasty, however, fell to terrible infighting, its members killing each other even as they preserved its continuity by marrying within the family itself. The same, sadly, can be said for the Hasmonean dynasty, which, as we have seen, fell to terrible infighting and civil war and yet still married each other in order to preserve its line. Our story has already shown us how the battle between brothers Hyrcanus and Aristobulus brought Rome into Jerusalem. And despite the civil war, a marriage nevertheless took place between Hyrcanus' son and Aristobulus' daughter, producing Princess Mariam, the wife of Herod. Thus, we have two queens who represent disintegrating dynasties. Moreover, Cleopatra's relationship with a world leader would have enormous implications for the power structures in the Middle East. And in a similar sense, one could say that the turbulent relationship between Herod and Mariam would also profoundly impact the future of the region and, of course, the future of the most important city on earth. With the help of Rome, Herod finally established himself in Jerusalem, this time not as tetrarch or governor, but as king, monarch of Rome's vassal Judean state. His marriage to Mariam, at least according to Josephus, on which this lecture is relying, was a genuine love-hate relationship. In contrast, Herod's relationship with his mother-in-law, the Hasmonean Princess Alexandra, was less complex and more of a hate-hate relationship. However, to Herod's great consternation, Alexandra, his mother-in-law, had struck up a friendship with Cleopatra when the Queen of Egypt visited Jerusalem and continued to correspond with her. Utilizing the power of the queen, beloved of the Roman ruler Antony, against her own son-in-law Herod. Alexandra first made this influence manifest when she lobbied for her son, Mariam's brother, to be appointed to be high priest. Recall that Hyrcanus, now old, friend of Herod's family, had had his ears cut off and could no longer serve in that position. Herod had appointed a priest from outside the Hasmonean family. After all, having Hasmonean in that role within the temple would set the stage for a restoration of the Hasmonean monarchy. Nevertheless, through Alexandra's lobbying, she successfully pressured Herod to appoint her son, the Hasmonean Jonathan, also named Aristobulus, in the role. Herod suspiciously kept Alexandra under constant guard, and she reached out to her fellow royalty in Egypt. Josephus tells us, she therefore sent to Cleopatra and made a long complaint of the circumstances she was in, and entreated her to do her utmost for her assistance. Cleopatra hereupon advised her to take her son with her and come away immediately to her into Egypt. This advice pleased her, and she had this contrivance for getting away. She got two coffins made, as if they were to carry away two dead bodies, and put herself into one and her son into the other, and gave orders to such of her servants as knew of her intentions to carry them away in the nighttime. Now their road was to be thence to the seaside, and there was a ship ready to carry them into Egypt. End quote. This was Cleopatra's plan, smuggle Alexandra and her son, meaning Herod's brother-in-law, out of Jerusalem in coffins. Herod, however, discovered the ploy, and Alexandra's escape plan was foiled. The story is all the more fascinating because, as we know, and as we'll discuss in later episodes, a century later, as Jerusalem was about to be destroyed by Rome, a student of Hillel, by the name of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, will escape by coffin and thereby ensure that the spirit of Jerusalem lives. Reading this account about Alexandra and Josephus, we can only wonder whether the story of Cleopatra's coffin stratagem inspired this later escape, one of the most important escapes in Jewish history. We will return to this point in the future, but for now, we continue with the intrigue in Herod's court, as another awful irony presents itself. We have seen how the Hasmonean dynasty first achieved glory by celebrating Sukkot in December, during the restoration of the temple in the Hanukkah story. We have also seen in the Sukkot Citron stoning incident, how the downfall of the Hasmonean dynasty became fully evident on the holiday. Now, at our point in the story, suddenly, in Herodian Jerusalem, another Sukkot brought the beginning of the end of the Hasmoneans. Herod's brother-in-law ministered as high priest to the acclaim of assembled world Jewry. I quote again from Josephus. For when this youth Aristobulus was now in the 17th year of his age, went up to the altar according to the law to offer the sacrifices, and this with the ornaments of his high priesthood, and when he performed the sacred offices, he seemed to be exceedingly comely and taller than men usually were at that age, and to exhibit in his countenance a great deal of that high family he was sprung from. A warm zeal and affection towards him appeared among the people. End quote. Herod, meanwhile, could not tolerate such a claim and decided to dispose of his brother-in-law, the high priest, inviting him to come swimming in his palace in Jericho. Again, Josephus, quote. After a while, the young man, at the instigation of Herod, went into the water among them, while such of Herod's acquaintance as he had appointed to do it, dipped him as he was swimming and plunged him under water in the dark of the evening, as if it had been done in sport only, nor did they desist until he was entirely suffocated. End quote. Herod then made a show of being extremely sad at the funeral, but of course his mother-in-law Alexandra knew what had occurred, and she wrote to Cleopatra, who in turn demanded of Antony that the Roman leader summon Herod before him. Herod, knowing he could not leave the Hasmoneans in charge, appointed his uncle Joseph as temporary ruler of Jerusalem, ordering Joseph to kill Queen Mariam if he noticed any attempt to restore power to her family. Standing before Antony, Herod gave the speech of his life and defeated Cleopatra's aims. Josephus again, quote, he soon induced him upon discoursing with him to leave off his indignation at him, so that Cleopatra's persuasions had less force than the arguments and presents he brought to regain his friendship. For Antony said that it was not good to require an account of a king as to the affairs of his government, for at this rate he could be no king at all, but that those who had given him that authority ought to permit him to make use of it. He also said the same things to Cleopatra, that it would be best for her not busily to meddle with the acts of the king's government. End quote. The story reveals, as Stacy Schiff notes in her biography of Cleopatra, that Antony was not at all under Cleopatra's complete control. But the story also reveals Herod's incredible gift for diplomacy and flattery in the Roman court, and Herod's ability to overcome the machinations, even of Cleopatra, the woman Antony loved. This diplomatic ability of Herod, as we will see in a moment, preserved his own power, even when Antony and Cleopatra lost theirs. Yet Herod was unable to avoid being manipulated by his own family. A deep hatred existed between his wife Mariam and his sociopathic sister Salome, who was mocked by Mariam for her own lack of royal lineage. Herod's sister Salome told Herod, when he returned to Judea, that a relationship had taken place between Mariam and Herod's uncle Joseph. This was a lie. However, once Herod was convinced that it was a lie and he embraced his wife, the Hasmonean princess let slip a conversation that she had had with Joseph. Again, Josephus, quote, Mariam said, yet was not that command thou gavest that if any harm come to thee from Antony, I who had been no occasion of it should perish with thee a sign of thy love to me? When these words were fallen from her, the king was shocked at them and presently let her go out of his arms and cried out and tore his hair with his own hands and said that now he had an evident demonstration that Joseph had had criminal conversations with his wife. End quote. Joseph, Herod's uncle, was therefore next to be executed, but Mariam survived for the present, which was more than could be said of Herod's Egyptian antagonist. Antony's failure in his battle in Parthia and his relationship with Cleopatra, whom he had proclaimed Queen of Kings, led to a Roman civil war, and this famous couple was defeated by Octavian, who became known as Augustus. Herod, an ally of Antony, appeared to be in danger, and the manic king of Judea began to suspect that even his old ally and friend, the former high priest Hyrcanus, was conspiring against him. He therefore ordered Hyrcanus's death, the death of the man who had done so much to keep Herod and his family in power. The man who, as we have said, was blind and deaf to the danger posed by this insane son of Antipater. Hyrcanus was not only Herod's friend, he was also, remember, the grandfather of his wife Mariam. Thus Josephus concludes his discussion of Hyrcanus as follows, quote, his character appeared to be that of a man of a mild and moderate disposition, and suffered the administration of affairs to be generally done by others under him. He was averse to such meddling with the public, nor had shrewdness enough to govern a kingdom. And both Antipater and Herod came to their greatness by reason of his mildness. And at last he met with such an end from them as was not agreeable either to justice or piety. End quote. Herod proved his brilliance before Rome by assuring Augustus of his loyalty, and in turn received an expanded Judea, one no longer under any obligation to Egypt. Meanwhile, Cleopatra and Antony died by suicide, with burial sites unknown to this day, their legend hailed by the words of Shakespeare's play named for them. No grave upon the earth shall clip in it a pair so famous. Cleopatra was not the only queen to die. Upon returning to Judea, Herod's wife angrily denied her bed to him. To paraphrase Stacy Schiff, it was to Herod's frustration that his wife never got over the fact that he had murdered most of her family. Seizing this moment, Herod's sister claimed that Mariam was planning to utilize a love potion to control Herod, and Alexandra, Mariam's mother, again this is all according to Josephus' account, denounced her daughter Mariam to save herself. Mariam was executed as well. But, Josephus adds, quote, when she was once dead, the king's affections for her were kindled in a more outrageous manner than before, whose old passion for her we have already described. For his love to her was not of a calm nature, nor such as we usually meet with among other husbands. For at its commencement it was of an enthusiastic kind, nor was it by their long cohabitation and free conversation together brought under his power to manage. But at this time his love to Mariam seemed to seize him in such a peculiar manner as looked like divine vengeance upon him for the taking away her life. For he would frequently call for her and frequently lament for her in a most indecent manner. End quote. The Babylonian Talmud, which has a parallel story describing a daughter of the Hasmoneans desired by Herod, a daughter not named in the story, a story that can be read literally or figuratively, describes the death of this daughter of the Hasmonean household differently than Josephus, along with some other elements of the story. The Talmud also fascinatingly and frighteningly tells us that Herod, out of love, preserved the body of this Hasmonean woman in honey so that he could see the woman he adored. This, of course, is not the Jewish way. It is Egyptians, like those of Cleopatra's country, who preserve the body after death. As Leon Cass once put it, quote, unlike the death-defying Egyptians, those ancient precursors of the quest for bodily immortality, the children of Israel do not mummify or embalm their dead. We bury our ancestors but keep them alive in memory, and accepting our mortality, we look forward to the next generation. End quote. Thus, does this Talmudic story perhaps symbolically capture how the Hasmoneans had forgotten transmission and lost their own familial continuity? The destruction of the Hasmoneans is a sad story, and yet, never in Jewish history is there darkness without light, however small it might be. And we will see tomorrow how, in the midst of the horrors of Herod, hope was born, and the transmission of the Torah from generation to generation suddenly found a new defender and hero in the city of Jerusalem. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.